Hour 3, Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Kevin Dunn. We got the All-American Rod Babers. We got John Reichel, who is in, playing some funky jams. Taking you all the way up until 7 o'clock. No Texas baseball this weekend. Talk a little Texas baseball during One and Done. Get to hornfm.com. Check out all the shows. You can podcast anything. So if you're thinking, oh man, how am I going to get my sports fix this weekend? Get it at hornfm.com. Also get the Horn app while you are while you're hanging out this weekend. That's going to help you listen to us anywhere you go. As always, we're always down to talk some Texas football. And so is our next guest. He is one of our favorites. You can see his stuff, really good work, at Inside Texas. And a book that was definitely ahead of its time, that would be Flyover Football. It's not that old, but where Ian kind of talks about the Big 12 landscape and the air attack. So we'll get into some of that stuff as we go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline and welcome the one and only Ian Boyd. Ian, how you doing? How's Michigan treating you?
Good. We just got the order. It's going to be maskless May.
Yes.
On my back deck with a cold one celebrating.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Yeah. No, good news from the CDC on that. And now we're just looking for good news about Texas football. Before we get into maybe the quarterback debate and some of the trends that you think we're going to see in the Big 12 and just who you like in the Big 12 this year, your takeaways from the spring game, was there anything overly positive or negative that struck you?
I thought that Hudson Card looks pretty good. I thought Casey Thompson actually, I mean, we'll get into this later. Both of those guys have gotten better in the last year and a half or so. Jordan Whittington looks good. Probably Christian Jones not looking like a turnstile at left tackle was very promising. And that guy has come a long way as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of good things mixed in there. Adam Ora looks good. It's hard to make a whole lot at the unit level because they were, you know, unevenly matched most of the game, and they're like subbing in backups. And 1 minute you're like, hey, this second team offensive line looks pretty good after all, and then you realize that the defensive line they're facing had just subbed in all the walk-ons, you know, or there was a walk-on at the point of attack who got blown off the ball. So, you know, it's. You have to look very closely to figure out what you can and can't make out of a spring game.
Yeah, no, I agree with Ian. It was almost, I described it as sexless flirting for Texas football fans.
A lot of marinade on that, but I think you're right.
Right, it was like you're flirting with what Sark and PK were going to bring to the table, but I don't know if you really got into the meat of any of it. But let me ask you this, Ian. What are your thoughts? What's the biggest concern for you? Even now, after digesting the spring game, you've been doing a ton of research on the background of Pete Kwiatkowski, the scheme he's going to bring in on Sark, and doing a great job over there at Inside Texas as well. What's the biggest concern for you now, where we stand right now with the roster?
I would say linebacker, which is obviously the concern the staff has because they've been trying to take anyone and everyone they can through the portal to make linebacker better. Mm-hmm. They have not been content to give up on Kwiatkowski's 2-4-5 nickel defense. But that means that they've had to, you know, really do their work in the transfer portal to find outside linebackers to have guys to put on the edges. And then inside linebacker, I would say, shoot, I was hoping I was never going to have to pronounce this guy's name now, but Pauliai Now Teote.
Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. That is good job.
Better job than I would have done.
Is he coming here or is that Ohio State, though?
Yeah. I think he would have started. I think he would have been very, very useful to this team. Would have been a really good complement to DeMarvion Overshown, who's, you know, 215 pounds and athletic for days, but not really a plugger inside. Would have been nice to have that 250-pound Islander next to him. Now I don't know what they'll do exactly. I think they might end up with David Benda next to Overshown or Brockermeyer, and they have a lot of guys that run really fast, but it's going to be interesting if those tackles can't protect them. So
Yeah, it is.
I would say that that's the concern.
I can see that. You mentioned the 2-4-5. Yeah, Rod had to turn his mic off when you mentioned some of those, some of the personnel.
Some of the options other than Overshown.
Next to Overshown. You mentioned the 2-4-5. Kwiatkowski, you know, he changes his schemes. He plays around with it. And one thing I like about him is that he usually finds the strengths and the weaknesses and will play off of that. But the 2-4-5, he loves. That means two defensive linemen. That's the strength of this defense. How does he play out the rest of the personnel with the secondary and the linebackers? Do you think that you see kind of some alternate type 2-4-5s and him kind of playing around with that, considering they've got depth and really good players on the defensive line?
Well, they have good corners with Deshaun Jameson, who this scheme is perfect for him because he gets to keep his eyes on the quarterback in their coverages now. And good things happen when Jameson is allowed to kind of freelance a little bit, obviously. They have Josh Thompson. Adamora, I know Chris Asher has a pretty good reputation around Austin, but I think what we're going to see from Adamora under the new staff is going to call into question some of what Chris Asher was using Adamora for. They, like, you know, they bulked him up to 215 and had him playing outside linebacker, basically. This guy can run and cover. So I expect they will lean into that and drop down the safeties pretty regularly to outnumber the offenses in the middle of the field, get some box safety help against the run, and just kind of swarm teams a little bit and rely on Jameson and Thompson outside holding up.
You know, what were your thoughts about Moro Ojomo and how he played? I mean, he was unbelievable in the spring game. Yes, it's just a spring game. I totally understand. But now I'm thinking that the interior defensive line is a little bit deeper than we all thought. And we all thought it was probably going to be the strength of the team. What's your thoughts about the rotation in that interior D line? You got Alfred Collins there. You got Tavondre Sweat. Got Keandre Coburn. Now Moro Ojomo. What are your thoughts about how that's going to end up dividing up?
Yeah, that's ideal, really. I think Alfred Collins is a little bit behind right now, but he's such an athlete. He's a different level athlete than anybody else on the team. So, you know, that light switch could be flipped at any moment, and then you have a NFL 3 technique on the field. And Ojomo was looking like a potential 2022 3 technique draft pick in the spring game. Mm-hmm. He uses his hands really, really well. One of the players, I can't remember who it was, and maybe this was off the record anyway, but he was saying, like, he's just there and then he's gone. You know, he swats your hands and he's just by you. He did a lot of different things too. He was, you know, piling up sacks in the spring game. He took on some double teams really well. So I kind of think Ojomo, this is a controversial take right now, but I kind of think Ojomo might end up being the starting 3 technique ahead of Collins. And if he isn't, you know, it'll be because Collins, you know, flipped a switch and dominated. So Texas is very, very good shape there, which is exactly what you want if you're iffy at outside and inside linebacker. Because if the other team can't blow the 2 defensive tackles off the ball, then not much else matters.
Yep. Ian Boyd, Flyover Football Inside Texas. Check out his stuff. He is one of our favorite Texas people to talk to, especially to talk football with. Ian, you've been pretty vocal that, and it's obviously been a debate, a question with Texas fans, hypercritical, at least on the spring game, on the 2 quarterbacks, Casey Thompson and also Hudson Card. Sark's got to find his guy. You think it's Hudson Card. Why?
I think he's just a much more natural fit for this offense. Sark really is not about the quarterback run game. He sees the quarterback's job as taking advantage of the running game by throwing the ball down the field or wide on RPOs and play action. And Hudson Card is just a different kind of talent throwing football than Casey Thompson. I know Thompson had some fantastic throws in the Alamo Bowl. He's not a scrub as a passer, but Card is a different level. Some of the anticipation on his throws in the spring game was next level. He's got a much stronger arm than Casey Thompson, and it's consistently accurate. And We got a clinic report that said that Casey Thompson looked solid in the RPO game, but Hudson Card was able to throw RPOs in spring practice, where he's turning one way to hand the ball and then flipping all the way around with his body to throw an RPO to the opposite end of the field if he sees the opening there. So that's really high level RPO passing, and God knows Texas needs, you know, any advantage they can get for their receivers. So I just think he's a much better fit and a much better talent as a passer. If they had hired more of his zone read coach, then I would say Casey Thompson had a much better chance, but they did not.
Hey, let me ask you, Ian, do you think that Sark right now is waiting for Hudson Card to take the job? It seems like that at least Denzel Okafor, remember the comments that he made that Casey Thompson was getting the majority of the snaps to the first team in the spring game. I think a lot of us were surprised that there was no mixing and matching, at least with the quarterbacks, right, that you would allow Hudson Card to at least get some reps with the first team. He got all of his reps with the second team. So the assumption is that Casey Thompson still has the somewhat of a lead there in that competition. But I agree with a lot of things you said, and I think Sark probably sees that too. What would be the reason, Rye, that Casey Thompson still has the advantage, or at least the perception of the advantage? Is that just the bowl game and Sark wanting the young Hudson Card to go take the job rather than giving him the job?
Well, I think Okafor may have misspoke a little bit, because Okafor, even in that quote, he said something to the effect of, it's not just Card, you know, Casey's getting a lot or more of the first team reps right now. But you know, in our reporting, that we've heard, it's been pretty split. But either way, I think Sarkisian really, really wants to have both of those guys on campus and not in the portal for the entire season.
Yeah.
I mean, neither of these guys are thick. The pass protection looked better in the spring game, but either of these guys may be taking some shots that they didn't see coming if they're back there. And I think the priority is on having both of them stick around at least through this next season, so that you don't have Charles Wright or Cole Lord or whoever other else is on campus having to take snaps in a Big 12 game with, you know, a Big 12 title berth on the line.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's mostly about that, protecting your depth chart. And I don't know if Hudson Card is run away with the job, you know. So
yeah,
there's no point in naming a starter right now. It's not like he didn't have the first team receivers, but it's not like he threw for 400 yards in the spring game. So
true. Both these guys have stuff to work on. I tend to agree with you that you try to keep both these guys out of the transfer portal, especially the veteran in Casey Thompson. Since you're such a big Hudson Card fan, what's the next step for him? What do you see that are deficiencies that he's got to work on to be an all Big 12 caliber type quarterback?
Man, we haven't seen him do that much in a Longhorn uniform yet. We've seen him, he looked good in the RPO game, in the spring game. Reportedly, he's looked good in spring practice throwing those. We haven't seen him do that much in the dropback game in a Texas uniform. We saw some of it like Travis, but not in Austin. And we haven't seen exactly what he looks like chucking it deep. So those would definitely be the areas. Those are typically, you know, those come a little later for quarterback in the dropback game, getting through progressions. And, making sure he has the right timing with whoever the best deep threat on this receiver, whoever the best deep threat receiver on this team is. It's hard to say exactly which of those areas he's most efficient in without seeing more. He definitely needs to be able to protect the ball and protect himself. I don't know that he's a guy that's going to risk his body by running down the field, but he has looked like a guy that could put himself and the ball at risk by trying to hang on and make a play in the backfield, throwing it rather than, you know, just getting down, throwing it out of bounds.
Hey, Ian, we've heard Sark be very complimentary of Rojo, and of course we all know the talent level of Bijan Robinson. I mean, he's got a chance to be potentially the best back, not only in the conference, maybe in the country, if all things come together for him. Do you think finally, because I've been advocating this for a while, even with Tom Herman, we'll finally get more two-back sets, two-back personnel packages, 21 and 20 personnel, because he's talked about how much, you know, he's got to put these two really talented backs on the field, even together at times. He's hinted at that. There's a little bit of that in his background at Atlanta, but I don't know if there's much. Do you think possibly we see a little more versatility with the personnel packages with Sark?
I kind of doubt it on that one, just because, I mean, if they're handing off to the running back as much as we all expect them to, and then they're throwing to the running back on mesh and in the passing game and checking down to those guys, then they can rotate those guys like USC did back in the day with Lindale White and Reggie Bush, and they could still both end up getting a lot of carries and a lot of touches. So I, given that there's not really any other proven running backs on the roster that anyone would be excited about or scared about outside of Austin, I tend to think that they'll just be very running back-centric this season and then have plenty of snaps for Rashawn Johnson where he's not, going to waste it on the bench.
Ian Boyd, Flyover Football Inside Texas. Ian, it does feel like a lot of people, certainly here in May, are saying Oklahoma would be the team to beat. Iowa State would be the obvious number two. Those two may even be in a class by themselves with everyone the Cyclones has coming back. Where do you put Texas? I thought I saw you're pretty high on TCU. Where does Texas fit in with that 3-6 range?
I think Oklahoma is the clear-cut number one. As always, nothing new. Moving on. I would say Iowa State, Texas, and TCU are all sort of in the next tier. And the tier after that would be pretty close to, but be something like Oklahoma State and Kansas State. Texas has, they have more NFL talent than all these other teams except for Oklahoma, but we've also seen them not make that much of that advantage for a very long time. Iowa State, they have everyone back. They went to the Big 12 title game last year, so they're pretty obvious. But TCU, they're going to have an upperclassman returning starter at quarterback for the first time since 2017, and one of the only times this decade other than 2017 and then the 2014-2015 run with Trayvon Boykin. In those three seasons, they won 10 games, 11 games, 12 games. And in 2017, they went to the Big 12 championship. Since then, they've just had disaster after disaster at quarterback. They're starting a new guy every year. Max Duggan finally was their first returning starter last year in a while, but he missed spring practice because of the pandemic, and then he missed fall camp because of a heart condition they found doing COVID testing. And they still went like 6-4 or something like that. This team has just really lacked a lot of the basic things you need to win games in the Big 12, like having any amount of experience at quarterback, any amount of health and consistency on the offensive line. And last year they were uniquely bad at defensive tackle as well. But they consistently have really high-level athletes at defensive end, usually. Certainly next year they will. Cornerback. They have one of the best wide receivers in the league, and Quentin Johnston. Some exciting slot receivers like Tay Barber and J.D. Spielman. So they have all these athletes that have just kind of gone to waste because they haven't had the quarterback play and the offensive line play, and they're finally rounding those position groups into form in a way they haven't in the past. So I think we're going to see TCU be a lot better than people are expecting. It's not, you know, at receiver or corner, these like athlete positions where Iowa State or other teams have been ahead of TCU. It's just basic, decent offensive line and experienced quarterback where they lacked, and I expect that to change. So I think TCU is actually the second best team in the conference heading into the season, depending on, a few things with Texas. If a few things break right for Texas, then they can leapfrog them.
Interesting stuff always, man. Ian, we appreciate it. Go play with your kids. Enjoy your weekend. Go get Flyover Football. It is a fantastic book. And check Ian's workout at Inside Texas. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Thanks for having me on.
Ian Boyd. We can get into some of that stuff a little bit later because some interesting stuff, especially with Hudson Card. What are you ranting about today?
Gonna get into, we'll get into all the money that is coming into sports because of legislation that was overturned now 3 years ago, I think we're getting to, and now it has completely changed the landscape of sports now and forever going forward. We'll talk about that in Rod's Rant of the Day. All of that and more on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
You've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, time for Rod's Rant of the Day. Before I get to Rod's Rant of the Day, I got to get into this.
Different rant.
Different rant for a different day, I guess. But the Broncos released right tackle Juwan James. Remember, he was the one that was hurt. He hurt his knee.
Working out.
We're just getting ready. Getting ready for training camp. Just getting ready for the season.
He was a weight runner.
Yeah, he was away from the facility, just working out on his own, right? And he ended up sustaining an injury, and it was a season-ending injury, and the Broncos, they are well within their right to release him, even though he got hurt training for upcoming camp and training for the practices they have coming up. He was released today. He was initially placed on the non-football injury list with the intention to not pay him the $10 million that he was owed.
And we knew there was going to be a fight with that.
There's going to be a fight with that, but I believe there when you're on the non-football injury list, there is a certain amount of compensation that you're given just being on that list. Like when I was on IR in the NFL, I think they cut your salary by like 40% to be on the IR. And I think that is part of like the reason you're on the commissioner's exempt list or non-football injury list. It just changes your compensation. You're not paid what you're normally paid. But they released him, meaning they ain't got to pay him a damn thing. It's the NFL. This is not Major League Baseball or the NBA, so you don't have guaranteed money. So
he'd have free health care after 2 months.
Exactly. Yeah, for life.
For life.
For life.
For life.
Not just for the season.
Yeah.
For life.
You think baseball would deal with this here?
He was injured away from the facility, so they're going to fight it, as you say, KD, man. But you just brought up a great point. Major League Baseball, nothing like this would ever happen. Number one, because their contracts are guaranteed. They do get free health care for life, but their players' union does have some testicular fortitude.
They do.
More than that.
I would say too much, but
may
have
too much. You're right about that. But they would go to war with the owners over something like this. And the NBA players, I think, similarly so, they would be very, very disgruntled and upset about something like this. Let's see what this does to the toothless NFL Players Association. By the way, I can say that because I used to be a part of it.
Yeah.
All right. It is a toothless Players Association. They care more about their guys being able to smoke marijuana than guaranteed money and free health care.
It was going to be coming down anyway.
It was coming. Well, you know what?
That
no.
was a fake chip.
It was a fake chip, but the NFL, they brilliantly used it in negotiation. And also class warfare. That's what really won this CBA negotiation for the owners. It was class warfare. They divided up the NFL between the guys who were paid the most money, the haves of the world, the Aaron Rodgers, the Russell Wilsons, all those guys
who can
and
miss
the have
a game
not.
Track, right?
And basically, guys, 80%, 80 to 85% of the NFL, they're have nots.
Yeah.
All right. They're just jags who
and
are going to be NFL for 3 or 4 years. Yeah. And you're asking these guys to miss checks. But not only that, remember, they offered to up the minimum salary for those 80 to 85 jags like Rod B and said, listen, Rod B, you're only in the NFL for 3 years, right? 3.5 years. That's the average time span that a player is in the NFL. We're going to up your salary to $1 million a year so that you can actually get some real monetary like separation, if you will, in those 3 years since you may not play past that. And when they did that, all of the guys who were making minimum salary decided, oh, I'd much rather get paid $1 million minimum salary. So, yeah, that's what happened in a nutshell. So they decided to look past all the healthcare options and guaranteed salary options and all that kind of stuff because they were brilliant in their strategy to separate the Players Association between the have and the have-nots. So it was just a good strategy. And by the way,
it's a good strategy.
I would have voted for that too if I was in the NFL.
Yeah,
I would have voted for the new CBA because I need that money.
Yeah,
but
totally get it.
They should have been. The point is, they should have been arguing for guaranteed money 5-6 CBAs ago.
Yep.
This shouldn't be something that's happening now in 2020.
Right.
That should be something they did years ago. Guaranteed healthcare for the most dangerous sport. Are you serious?
Right.
That should be something.
Also
that,
guaranteed contracts for the most popular sport.
Yeah, at least give health care to the guys for 10 years after they're done. I think now it's based on vested years. So I think I had five vested years. So I think I got 5 years of health care after I was done. I think it's based on vested years. But the average NFL career is 3.5 years.
Well, yeah. And also, we found out, a lot of those problems can come down the line.
They don't 50 years old.
Right.
When I'm done, when I'm 28, 29,
yeah.
I don't have those issues right there. And, you know, they should have the option where you can decide when you want to use that health care.
I was just thinking that.
They should all, if you got that five to 10 years of health care, they should give you the option to want to use it in your 50s.
Yeah.
Or once you turn 40, as opposed to say, oh, as soon as you get done, that's when your clock starts to use your health care. There are ways where they can make this more accommodating, but they don't, because they just roll over for the owners every damn time. Anyway, I digress. Sorry, that's not the rant of the day.
No, it was a good rant, though.
That's not the rant of the day. The rant of the day is about sports gambling, actually. And I was really blown away by these numbers. And I got them from the Action Network. So total handle is the total amount of money that is bet on any specific sport, on any sport, a sports period. And right now, since 2018, that's when PAPSPA was actually overturned. Now, I remember May 14, 2018, the Supreme Court made it possible for each state to make their own determination regarding sports betting, and they repealed PAPSPA of 1992. That's when the floodgates opened. And in June of 2018, Delaware beat New Jersey, whose original lawsuit created the momentum for the change, and they took the first bets.
I lost that bet, actually,
but it was,
funny
yeah,
enough.
Exactly.
I figured Jersey would be the one.
Yeah, exactly, right? And Jersey is now leading the way. By the way, for the first time in history, New Jersey has surpassed Vegas.
Wow.
In total handle, you go look at total handle since May 14, 2018, Nevada, Nevada is at 14.5, New Jersey's at 14.4.
Okay, so it's right
but
there.
I will say that, exactly, Nevada's had 90-plus years of a reputation and a tradition of that. So they're not surpassing them yet, but they will. New Jersey will probably surpass Nevada in overall total betting handle. That's money bet on particular sports. They'll probably pass them sometime this year or next year in total handle. And right now, New Jersey, so since May 14, 2018, all right, you're talking about 3 years of it, they have now accumulated $14.4 billion.
Wow.
In total handle. That's total money bet. Since that same in that same time span, Pennsylvania, $6.8 billion bet on sports. Illinois, $3.6 billion. Indiana, $3.4 billion. Colorado, $2 billion. Iowa, $1.4 billion. Tennessee at $1 billion. And Mississippi even got to $1 billion.
Imagine what this would be in Texas with the money down here.
$991 million. Yeah, I think Texas would be primed for it. Texas, in my opinion, would instantly jump to one of these states in the top five.
Yeah.
I think they'd easily,
at least,
they would surpass Pennsylvania. They'd be right behind Nevada and New Jersey. But what's going to happen is New York, as we all know, is getting ready to pass legislation to legalize sports gambling there, and New York will surpass Nevada and New Jersey. It may actually surpass them combined.
You think so?
A lot of people believe that New York's going to take this thing to a whole nother level, with New York, Florida, Massachusetts, Texas, and California potentially looking to have passed legislation to have legalized sports gambling. They said next year's yearly sports betting handle could approach $25 billion if two to three of those states actually do pass that legislation. So right now, I mean, sports betting, you're looking at local revenue and ways to boost local revenue. Other than legalized marijuana, which is the fastest growing industry in the country, there is no better way to boost local revenue than legalized sports betting.
Yeah.
It's just been and like I said, since 2018, and now we're approaching 2018, 2019, 20, basically 4 years, I guess, of it. Now you're getting to the point now where you're getting states who are getting into the billions, the multi-billions of dollars in revenue. And I would say in total handle, because that's divided up. That's not tax revenue yet either. So I'm not getting to it. It's just total handle, how much was bet. That'll be divided up into tax revenue. It'll be, you know, everybody's got their own, I guess, statewide, got their own restrictions and their own tax laws and stuff about that. So I don't know how that works from state to state. I will admit that. But once you pass the tax laws and you can tax the sports handle and tax the money being wagered, I mean, you can make a ton of revenue, and I'm sure they are. I'm sure that, I don't know what Nevada's tax laws are with their legalized sports betting or New Jersey's, but I'm sure the state's getting 30, 40% of that.
So we saw it on the last election here. The casinos are trying to maybe pass here in Texas. Do you think you start there and then you get to just all out gambling, or do you think Texas would just go all in and start there?
That's a good question.
Because I felt like if that went through, then that's starting to be a primer.
That would be the beginning of it.
Yeah, it's the foreplay.
That's exactly right. So I don't. It's a good point. I don't know how much momentum that actually has in Texas. I mean, we all know how conservative Texas is about a lot of these issues. So it may be something that's got to gradually wear down. But because the politicians know a lot of money is leaving Texas just for gambling purposes, right? People are leaving to go to Louisiana and Oklahoma to go gamble. But the legalized sports betting to me seems like an easier thing to, like you said, to transition.
It does.
To desensitize those who may be a little opposed to it or be thinking it's something that's taboo. Sports betting, I think, is easier for people to accept.
Yeah.
Rather than just the old school casino gambling.
Right. Yep.
But I'm not saying it's very different. I'm just saying I think it's easier for people to accept gambling on March Madness, which people do all the time, rather than,
he's already doing it.
Yeah, he's going to the casino and he's putting it all down on, you know, red or black.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's, I don't know. But you're right. I think for Texas, they should be one of the states looking at it seriously. And not that Texas needs a ton of, you know, ways to increase revenue. They should always be looking for ways to increase revenue. They
don't
need it.
That's one of the things that separates them is that they do that.
They do
that. Which is why I knew weed would be legal even with conservative states by some point, because why?
Yeah.
Because money.
Revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what's out there. So just giving you a little bit of the background on it, man. It's coming to a state near you, but you can get a lot of money from it. And
remember, Jersey and Vegas are essentially tied.
Yeah, right now. In terms of total betting handles since May 14, 2018, they have both gotten around $14.5 billion for Las Vegas, or for Nevada, I should say, and $14.4 billion in total handle bet in New Jersey. And that's in 4 years.
Yeah.
It's amazing,
it's coming here at some point.
Yeah. Adam Silver says that he thinks there's upwards of $400 billion wagered illegally every year in America alone. In America alone.
Right.
$400 billion.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to wrap my brain around that number.
Weed. It's like, we might as well get our hands on some of this and tax it.
You might as well get some of that and tax it. Exactly. People are going to bet anyway.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we will use the guys as, we're trying to make sure it's safe and healthy. We're trying to get rid of a black market. Now you're trying to get your hands on some money here.
Yeah, but just even getting, like you said, 5%. If $400 billion is actually the number that is bet in America illegally every year, you get, if you're in the NBA, you want 5% of that.
Right.
You get, or less.
Think about 1%
that. 1% of that will be pretty damn good.
Yeah. That'll help out with the loss from China.
Exactly. So Adam Silver's pretty smart. He's probably the most progressive of all the commissioners.
Agreed.
About it right now.
Good rants, man. You got a 2-for-1 right there. You came in with a little NFL and then gambling. So get to hornfm.com.
And they're connected, too.
They're definitely.
The NFL has hired a
connected.
They've hired a commissioner for sports gambling.
We're seeing it.
Sports wagering, yeah.
And it's only going to continue to grow. Another off the record coming up next with the CDC news. Single people are ready to rock.
Come on. They respect. Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. All right, I got this little study from Yahoo Finance. It's another off the record here, but this is pretty cool.
This was Yahoo Finance?
I got it from Yahoo Finance. Okay. It's from Match.com. You know, the dating app Match.com.
Never
or the dating website Match.com. They've been around forever. Okay, so they released findings from their first Summer of Love survey. This music goes perfectly with the Summer of Love survey.
John,
what is this?
I
this
know
is
what
great.
You're doing. John planned this.
This is awesome.
Yeah, this is Return of the Love Jones by Flamingosis.
Oh, well done.
Sounds like it's got a 70s
I feel like Barry White
sitcom.
Should be singing to this.
Yeah.
Little Barry White should be coming up.
All I love my head down.
Anyway, all right, here's the Summer of Love survey from Match. Okay, so according to this survey, guys, and they surveyed over 2,000 of its single users on what kind of hot summer they're going to have. Maybe a hot girl summer, Whiteboard summer, as Chad Hanks calls it, right? Whiteboard summer.
Yeah,
white
yeah,
boy
what,
summer. Didn't that Chad Hanks call it a whiteboard summer?
Yeah, this is the summer of the new white boy. White boy's going to be coming out.
Yeah, he did. Which is Tom Hanks' son, by the way. White boy summer.
I'm not even asked what that means.
Oh, you never followed that? Chad Hanks and the white boy summer?
I didn't.
Oh, man. Tom Hanks' son, Chet Hanks, who was a rapper, I think, right? Isn't he a rapper?
Well, attempted to.
Yeah. Good point.
If he has enough money, he can call himself whatever he wants. Right.
True that.
John, I'm glad you gave the air quotes. I didn't need them, but I'm glad you gave them.
Yeah, he's a rapper, and he came out and said he's going to have a white boy summer, but he did clarify that it's not a racial thing. It's not about race at all. It's just that white boys.
Well, he is white.
He is white, yeah. So exactly, like, people were getting on, like, white boy summer. He's like, well, he's white. He can have a white boy summer. It's cool to have white boy summers. It's all good. All right, well, this type of summer is going to be a hot boy summer, a hot girl summer, more like it. So according to this new survey, and this was done by Match.com with over 2,000 single people, 70% of them said they are ready to put themselves out there as much as possible this coming summer.
Mm.
I don't even know what that means, out there. They're ready to put themselves out there.
I think that's trying to be a classier way of saying I'm going to go sleep around.
Okay, I'm about to put out.
Yeah.
Put myself out there means I'm about to put out.
I'm literally going to put myself out there.
I'm literally going to put it all out there. Okay, there you go.
So guys do that. So we always look at where the women are trending on that. So if the women are saying, hey, I'm going to...
Yeah, these are the women saying...
I say be looser with your morals. I'm just going to be a little sluttier. And that's okay, men and women.
There's going to be a flash sale, if you will.
Well done. Now, they don't say how many men or women they interviewed here, but I'm assuming it's split.
Because single men will do that anyway.
Single men are always putting out and ready to put themselves out there. It doesn't matter. Men are just men, right? We're sluts, but they don't shame men for being sluts. They shame women for it, and that's wrong.
Completely unfair.
It's wrong. It's not cool. 69%, nice.
Wow.
Feel more confident in who they are looking for after the past year. So after being quarantined at home for a year and then having to analyze their options, they now know what they want in a partner.
That means some of those people broke up during this time, probably realized, you know what? You know why we broke up? I'm not looking for that whenever I go out again.
That's true. You're right. I agree with that 100%. You know exactly what you don't want.
Right.
Because you might have been the wrong person.
Once again, it's a visual, physical thing. We already knew pre, during, post-pandemic what we're looking for.
We know what we're looking for.
We do.
It's all the same. It's TNA. It's TNA and a cute face.
Well, I forgot the stat exactly.
Unfortunately.
Men,
we're pretty shallow.
Men can decide really damn quickly.
No, it's...
Within seconds, right?
No, it's...
If they sleep with a woman?
Actually, women. The studies that have been done say that a woman decides quicker within 3 minutes if you are a potential mate for her.
Interesting. I thought it was the other way around.
It takes her 3 minutes to figure it out.
Because I'm like 5 seconds.
But that's a mate. Not just somebody I want to bang it out with.
Gotcha.
So the assumption is that guys will bang it out with anything.
Yeah.
As long as it's a 4 and up.
Right.
It's like, well, I'm down. So we don't really have to wait to get attracted to somebody and get to know them. Men are just physical
Is it a yes or no, Bob? Yes.
Pretty much.
Well, I haven't showed your yet.
Yeah. So
yeah,
that's
a yes.
Yeah. But they say women know pretty quickly. Like, they know within 3 minutes if you're... So they check out subtle things like your shoes and your hair and... pheromones, that's subconscious stuff, and boom, she knows.
She knows.
Okay.
Camila was down.
40% of the people surveyed here said they feel more excited about the idea of meeting new people through dating. That goes with getting out there. 52% are worried potential matches won't be looking for a serious relationship over the next few months. They're right about that.
They are right about that.
The survey of lovers suggests that it will be a summer for lovers, because 71% of the people surveyed said they want to be in a serious relationship this summer, while only 7% don't. So they want to get into an actual intimate partnership with someone, not just a real relationship. Yeah, not just to have a blank buddy. Every now and then.
Nothing wrong with that either.
Nothing wrong with that either. That's what you want to do. You're an adult. 65% say they are not interested in hookups or casual sex, while 35% said they are open to it. So there you go. Real relationships, man. Either way, 57% of singles confirm they want to have sex this summer.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's just singles.
No, that's not.
I think that's going to be 100% of all of us want to have sex this summer if you're an adult.
I bet you married men are even higher than that.
Yes, I will be one of those married men soon.
Be great to have sex this summer.
Be great. Can we plan it out on a Tuesday, please? this is the question, according to the survey of lovers. Vaccinated or not vaccinated, 46% agree that once vaccinated, they will be ready to start dating in real life again. 56% of the people are somewhat very concerned with a date's vaccination status. Remember, when I was single, I used to carry my STD results with me. I'm not making that up.
Yeah, but the vaccination isn't going to help with the STDs. Like I know. I would think
that's what I was saying. You need both.
Right. Your apprehension should be the same before and after COVID.
I'm with you.
Because it's about STDs and pregnancy if you don't want that.
You should always be wrapping it up right? And
those
trying
two
to be
things.
Safe.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. The COVID vaccination, that's different.
There's just been a lot of, not misinformation, there's just been a lot of people maybe confused, at least online, if you look at, well, hell, the plastic bag gas thing. But certainly with COVID, just a reminder, if you got vaxxed, it doesn't mean that you're not going to get an STD now.
And by the way, getting vaccinated doesn't mean you're not necessarily going to get COVID.
That too.
Bill Maher was vaccinated and got COVID. Some of those Yankees players, like eight of them, have been vaccinated
and
got COVID.
They got it, yeah.
But it keeps you from getting the most serious symptoms of it.
Gotcha.
Or to be hospitalized.
Hospitalized.
I don't know why it's hard for me to say hospitalized for it, yeah.
Yeah, where hopefully you won't die.
That's
hopefully you won't be part of the 500,000 in
that's
America.
What the vaccine is supposed to keep you from.
Kind of a big deal.
The death and the hospitalization of it.
Right.
Yeah. So
interesting numbers there.
Carry your vaccine card with you because the woman you're hooking up with may want to know if you're vaxxed or not. And carry your STD results with you, too. That helps.